carbon market. It's a credible market. It is well established. It also provides you with returns that are very different to other markets. It's not correlated with equities. It's not correlated with bonds. It's probably more to do with industrial production, because the more production you have, the more emissions there are.
Welcome everyone to the next edition of our Opening Bell podcast at NZX. I'm Doug Vrame, here with my colleague Sarah Manhinnick. And today we'll be talking about investing in sustainability. And we have Paul Harrison, who is with Salt Funds Management and runs the Carbon Fund. So Paul, hello and thanks for coming.
Well, thank you.
So just to get started from a broad level, can you kind of just give us a quick background on your background, what led you to this, and kind of what the Carbon Fund is all about?
Yeah, sure. So from a personal point of view, I started in the investment management industry back in February 1988, so like 4 months after the 87 crash, which was quite a big deal here in New Zealand for a very, very long time. So fortunately, I went to work for a company called Southpac Corporation. I worked in the investment management part of it. It had some early sort of visionaries, if you like. Rob Walker was the CEO. Graham Thomas, who went on to form Milford. We had people like John Phipps and James Ring in it. We also had Rob Moss and Tom Rea, who formed MMC, which I think is the big backbone for most of the administration in New Zealand, and Anthony Edmonds, who created InvestNow. So there was a whole bunch of sort of people there of really interesting backgrounds. I was there for about 10 years and went on to work for Goldman Sachs JB Were here in Auckland. And then a bit later on, I went to work for BT Funds. And then in 2013, Matt Goodson and myself did a deal with the Westpac BT guys, and they gave us 640 odd million to run as a contract for them. And that was the start of Salt Funds Management. When we were at, just onto carbon, when we were looking for things, we were actually at BT. In New Zealand, the ETS, the Emissions Trading Scheme, started back in 2008. I think it was the second federal system for carbon pricing in the world. And we were looking at it at that time. It was quite a volatile beast, if you like, in terms of the rules were pretty wild, and there was there were issues with it. But over time, they improved. And I think that's the one thing that we were looking for, was when you're looking at different asset classes or markets, you want some certainty around the rules and conviction that the people that create the market are going to actually keep it going. And you know, slowly we saw that there was bipartisan support from both sides. You had National that signed up to the Paris Agreement. They also got rid of some of the sort of got rid of the offshore influences, the fake credits, for want of a better expression. And it became much more of a market that we were looking for in terms of what it looked like at that stage.
Interesting.
So you've mentioned the Carbon Fund. For people that are listening that might not have necessarily any idea about what the Carbon Fund is, how it was created and how it worked, could you give a really simple explanation of what that fund does?
Sure. It's I think to take it back, when we looked at why you would invest in carbon, and I think in some ways for us, as I mentioned before, that you've got the marketplace, you've got the rules, but you also need an investment reason to invest in it. And when we started off, the price on carbon was quite low, and you know, we could see the things around climate change and the problems you were having with climate change. And you know, when we looked at experience with renewable energy and stuff over in the last sort of few decades, has really been, it's all been driven around oil price, and you'd have all this investment that would come into renewable energy when the oil price was high, and then the oil price would collapse and you wipe out a whole generation of all that, all those people, all that tech. Carbon pricing to us was actually a solution to that. So if you could have a steady price in carbon, or a price that reflected what people were putting into it, that would have a much greater impact. So we were quite excited by this. And the whole thing around climate change, I think, really started to take off. When we first started talking about this to people, we would get kickback and, you know, climate deniers and stuff. We don't really get that anymore at the presentations we've given. But I think for us, the thing that we realized was something needed to be done was back in 2018, the IPCC came out with their report saying that plus 1.5 degrees was as bad as plus 2. So, you know, things needed to be changed in the way we were doing it. You know, so a price will change behavior. So a price will change behavior of the corporates and change behavior of the consumers. And the one thing that, you know, just to back it up a little bit, is that a lot of the talk was around plus 2 degrees. So plus 2 degree refers back to pre-industrial levels. And when they came out and they said, well, plus 1.5 is almost as bad. So to give you an idea, at plus 2 degrees, 99% of the coral reefs in the world are gone. At plus 1.5, 90% are gone. So it's almost as bad, you know, when you look at it. So something needed to be done, need to be done fast, because this report from the IPCC was saying we could be there as early as 2030, so within 10 years. So and it wasn't all going to arrive on the 1st of January 2030. It was going to come in aggressively from, you know, from you know, 2020 onwards, we thought. And there was also the pressure of the Paris Accord that we'd signed up, which covered from 2020 to 2030. But in terms of what the fund does, we wanted to invest in the price of carbon. We thought that the price of carbon emissions, so these are really allowances that allow people to emit carbon dioxide or such into the air, you've got to have a feel for where you want it to go. And if you're trying to change behavior, you need a higher price than what we had at the time. Mm-hmm. So the problem was we had a low price at the time. The people that were sequestering the carbon, absorbing the carbon, like the forestry guys, they weren't getting a fair price. They were basically being left to fend for themselves against the big emitters that really probably controlled the price of it a little bit. And we had a government that came in and set it at maximum. They had a $25 option. And from what we could see is that option of $25 was just too easy for them to use as a keeping the price down from the emitters. So we wanted to invest in that. So the fund invests in these carbon credits, these allowances. And I think we started off with the intention of New Zealand. We've expanded. We've got some units in Australia. Australia is probably a different kettle of fish in terms of the way that's operated in the last sort of few years. It's been a little bit of a disappointment. We've also got the option to trade in some of the other markets. So we're seeing you've obviously got the European one, the Californian one's really starting to develop now. And we're seeing a lot of other countries bring in these emissions trading schemes, so that, you know, there's lots of ability for us to go into other places. We always thought that the idea of the fund would be that you would invest in the markets that were sort of had the most work to do, if you like, because they would have the most price appreciation or price pressure. And at the same time, there was a big education process for us in terms of, you know, what is a carbon allowance or carbon credit, and why should people worry about this and be concerned? And I think that was the opportunity for us. We wanted, by putting it onto the NZX, the fund was going to be more people would see it. We created its own separate website. The digital nature of things these days, you know, we've had this year to date, we've had over 30,000 people come to that website and go through over 70,000 pages of information, or, you know, 70,000 page views. So it's been a real experience with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for explaining that. And I mean, for people listening, how can investors participate in the auction for the Carbon Fund to get access to this market-based product?
So the Carbon Fund itself will trades on the NZX, so you can buy them through your stockbroker, or you can apply directly to us. We have once a week, we'll issue new units, and so it's growing all the time. In terms of the underlying assets, this is an easy way for people to get exposure to carbon credits. So the way the ETS works in New Zealand is the government has created a market for carbon emissions. So the government will assess how much has been emitted to the companies, and then it will also assess how much has been absorbed by the forestry people. And then the government also is also providing a certain number of credits. And as you mentioned, they're now auctioning those off into the marketplace. So for investors, it's a little bit hard to get into those auctions. We are a participant in those auctions, so we can buy units in that auction if we think it's the right price.
And what would you say are the benefits of the Carbon Fund for the investors?
So the thing with the carbon market, it's a credible market. It is well established. It also provides you with returns that are very different to other markets. It's not correlated with equities. It's not correlated with bonds. We think it's probably a little bit of correlation is probably more to do with industrial production, because the more production you have, the more emissions there are. So there is that. I mean, to give you an idea, the carbon fund is up 9% this year versus an index, and New Zealand's down 14%. So that it's driven by different things. So you get that benefit. And I think at the same time, there's also that whole thing with creating a fair market for those people that are sequestering carbon. They're getting paid a fair amount for it.
Absolutely. And then just to circle back, you mentioned earlier on about the Paris Agreement. It would be great to hear from you sort of an overview of what New Zealand has actually signed up to in the Paris Agreement. And, you know, how is New Zealand on track towards reaching our climate goals as a country?
Yeah, so if the Paris Agreement, we signed up to the Paris Agreement, and the idea was that we would reduce our emissions to 30% below where they were in 2005. Unfortunately, if you have a look at some of the commentaries around New Zealand and what we're doing, I think the climate tracker describes New Zealand policies at the moment as highly inefficient, and we're more in line with a plus 4 degrees world than we are with a plus 2 or a plus 1.5. The government here has had various attempts at trying to change things. We haven't quite got there. But you know, under the Paris Accord, there is an urgency for this because to give you an idea, New Zealand gross emissions are, call it 80 million tons a year. To get to Paris, we're supposed to be only doing 60. So every year, we've got 20 million tons a year of extra volume that's being emitted. So it's unclear at the moment what happens. You know, we may end up with a bill for 100 million tons, 150 million tons at the end of all this by 2030. So the taxpayer is in line here for a bit of a bill to be paid. So there is that financial pressure. And so you've got the financial pressure as well as obviously the impacts of climate change as well, which I think is they're going to get worse and people are going to worry more and more about it.
Absolutely.
So talking about just the other funds that are managed by SALT, just out of curiosity, is the carbon fund gaining new investors? Is it known as an attractive kind of thing with the volatile markets you talked about? Are more people taking a look at it now than they were maybe 2 years ago when markets were really on fire on the equity side?
Yeah, I mean, well, when we first kicked it off in 2018, there was what the government had was a fixed price option at $25 and increased it to $35. So people would say, oh, you know, price is only ever going to go up to $25 or such. So that was a bit of an impediment. Now that's pretty much gone. So there's a lot more people looking at that. I think as climate change has become more of an issue, we're seeing more people, and being on the NZX helps a lot for visibility. And then we have the website and own digital media and stuff around this as well. So it's a very different product to most things that other things we run. The other products that we run, we have a standard core equities portfolios that New Zealand and Australia. We have global products. We have a global shares fund that's managed by Morgan Stanley out of London, and we have a global property and global infrastructure fund run by Cohen Steers out of New York. And then on top of that, we have a diversified, you know, an income product and a growth product, so we can use the mix of underneath of what we've got. So the really interesting thing has been the combination of having a lot of these things. The other fund we also have is a long short fund, which again, in these kind of markets, you know, you're trying to give people options around how they invest and how they best position and create returns with the lowest level of volatility, lowest level of risk as you can, and using combinations of these kind of funds that, you know, we believe it's the way to do it. So
you talked about the inability for retail investors or any investor really to access the carbon market directly. Basic question, but can you just talk a little bit about the difference for investors who may not know between investing in a fund compared to buying individual stocks or bonds? You talked about some of the advantages, but maybe, you know, go into that a little bit more and what the differences are.
Yeah, I suppose it's an interesting conversation to have with the NZX around people buying shares directly themselves. But I think in some ways, the whole thing about it, the way the fund managers operate, it's around a unit trust, and technology maybe will break that a little bit, because the whole thing with unit trust is it's about scale and keeping costs down and things like that to a certain extent. Technology will probably is sort of getting around that when you look at the likes of Sharesies and, you know, people being able to do things like that. But I think people investing in stocks, you know, you'd always recommend they have a portfolio just to take the volatility around. You're not always going to get everything right. It's one of the hardest things of being a fund manager. You know, you sort of got to accept you're going to get, you know, reasonable, you know, a third of your decisions wrong. And I think if you have a portfolio of stocks, then you get rid of some of that volatility. And so that's about a fund manager. I think in terms of individuals doing this versus a fund manager, the returns you get out of investing is really around your ability, the time you've got to dedicate it, and your information sources. So a fund manager should have all of those things, and in terms of being able to dedicate that to getting you returns for the right risk level of risk that you're taking. So fund managers generally should be doing slightly better than or better than individuals. There's always that element of people confusing luck with skill as well, you know, in terms of things like that. So, you know, the fund managers suffer from it as well. But
So based on some of the things you're seeing with what's going on in the market now, what are the investors that you're seeing or working with kind of drawn to out of the suite of funds that you guys offer? What's kind of popping up as some popular investment choices?
Well, I think in some ways investors are naturally drawn to stuff that's performed quite well.
Yeah.
So again, it's sort of the long short fund is up, I think it's about 11 or 12% this year. The carbon fund's up 9%. People kind of like the look of that and they're thinking, well, maybe I should be in that. Particularly given, so those two funds we're finding is quite good incoming inquiries and money coming into those. I think given people are not silly, are they? They can see that the markets are going to be quite disrupted for a while, inflation, cost of living, earnings are going to be starting to be downgraded in a lot of companies. I think it's a lot more uncertain. And, you know, the people we saw in the last couple of years, we saw a lot of people disappear out of the bond market and into equities because they were looking for better returns because the yields on the bonds were so low. So they've gone for dividends out of companies and stuff. They've starting to unwind that, obviously, because of the volatility you're seeing in shares, but also the yields on the bonds are going back up again. So a little bit more attractive.
So what are you guys seeing for in terms of product development or strategic goals for SALT the next few years? Any opportunities out there that you're noticing?
Yeah, we've been working on a couple of different ideas. We haven't managed to pull off a couple at the moment, but it's sort of about, again, it's about giving people investment options in this kind of market and stuff that can diversify their risk profile and take the volatility out of, because no one likes their portfolios bouncing around all over the place. I think looking forward, there's a lot of effort needs, you know, we've been doing this for a little while now around sustainability, ESG, that's becoming more and more of a focus. And you've got to look at how companies deal with climate change, how they deal with their staff, how they deal with their community and things, because all that's about the longevity of the business as well.
So one last question, then we'll get into some more kind of lighthearted stuff. But when you look for the next 5 or 10 years, or what makes you kind of excited about the future in terms of the New Zealand market?
I think the way that people are accessing investments is really exciting in terms of, you know, I, again, it's around how does the investor access things? And to me, one of the logical platforms to access things through is NZX and the stock exchange. And then there's obviously people coming directly to fund managers like SALT to be able to invest directly with them. But then it's also about us supporting those traditional KiwiSaver, the financial planning networks and things as well, because there will still be that. But the thing with this is that when you talk to the share brokers, a lot of their clients, the average age is 70-odd. So there's going to be a big transition away, you know, it's going to have to be in the next 10, 15 years. That money's going to go somewhere. And, you know, I think the great thing about the Sharesies and what NZX is doing is that the education of the younger generation needs to happen, because that's going to go, that money will flow out somewhere. And the last thing you want to do is see them putting it in the wrong place. In terms of our business, I just think that's sort of really exciting. In terms of where I look at the world and it's the way it's developing, we're only just at the beginning of a lot of the technological change. And I just think there's going to be so many investment opportunities around tech, whether it's biotech or AI or things. These things are going to change the world very quickly. And so it's an exciting time.
Well, thank you, Paul. We'll just do a little quick fly around to give people a sense of kind of you as a person. Clearly you've been at the forefront of the investment community for a long time now. So what's the best investing podcast or book that you've ever read or listened to?
Oh, I think if you're after a book, you probably got to start with Benjamin Graham, you know, the whole understanding companies and what they do, you know, that security analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, Best piece of advice you've ever received, I guess, business-wise, or even in something that's helped you kind of personally, either or?
I did a short course up at university. It was called something like Being Deliberate. And it's always struck me as something that should have been taught at school, because it's sort of, you know, it's about setting goals and things, but it's about having options as well in those goals and how you want to get there. But then the deliberate part of it becomes, you know, I've got to make sure I'm as prepared as I can be if I get the opportunity to do something within those goals. I need to be prepared to do it. So it's why you see the guys when they practice goal kicking or whatever from anywhere or whatever, and guys practicing the golf shots from random places and things. It's the same should be done for business.
Mm. Yeah, that's good advice. There's a saying, luck is the residue of good preparation,
yes,
that I always
exactly.
really like. And I think that speaks to what you just said. What's your favourite place to visit internationally now that the borders are open again?
Oh, I've always liked going to the big cities. You know, New Zealand's a long way away from everywhere. So, you know, the New Yorks and Paris's and stuff. But, as a country, I also like places like South Africa as well, because it's so different to New Zealand, but in some sense they know where New Zealand is, so it's sort of got that.
still get credit. Now, are you located in Auckland, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So our last kind of question here, do you have a favorite restaurant recommendation in Auckland, or actually in New Zealand?
You've got to go down to Britomart to Olma. The anchovies on toast, worth the visit alone. I don't like anchovies, but I'll eat those.
Man,
yeah,
it's a bold call.
Yeah.
well, I think that's it. And Paul, thank you very much for taking the time to come here and share your thoughts. Remind all the listeners, check out the Salt Funds website at www.saltfunds.co.nz, and the Carbon Fund has its own website at carbonfund.co.nz/thefund. So any questions, please follow up. But Paul, thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks, Chair. Cheers.
The information provided in this podcast is a guide and is intended for general information purposes only. The information is not investment advice. The information should not be relied upon as a substitute for detailed advice from a professional advisor. The podcast may contain opinions or forward-looking statements, and actual results may vary from what is expressed in this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the presenter or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of NZX. NZX Limited is not liable for any loss suffered through relying on the information in this podcast. NZX makes no warranties as to the accuracy or completeness of the information in this podcast. All intellectual property rights in the content of this podcast are owned or used under license by NZX, and NZX's written consent is required to use, redistribute, or reproduce the content, or use it to create other works.